Hello, I'm Tony Liddington, and I've been a seaside entertainer for over 30 years. And you're listening to a special programme for Radio 4 Extra, in which I'm delving into the sound archives and unearthing programme gems celebrating Britain's seaside heritage, particularly the entertainments. Max Miller had a reputation for being a bit careful with his money. And in a programme called Tales from the Lodge Room, recorded at the Comedia here in Brighton in front of a live audience and first broadcast in 2004, comedian Roy Hudd, who worked with Max Miller many times, recalled one of his favourite stories about trying to persuade Maxie to buy him a drink.
Now, my own experience of Max's canniness came during a never-to-be-forgotten week for me at the Finsbury Park Empire in 1959. In those days, I was part of a double act with my pal Eddie Kay, and we spent the week spellbound watching Max and his co-stars from the great days of the halls. Now, one night, I saw Max standing in the wings watching us as we did our rather shaky 7 minutes, and as we came off, Max grabbed me and said, "I liked it, boys. I liked the Shakespeare bit at the end." Actually, it was supposed to be two Noel Cowans talking, but never mind, you know. And he asked us to come up to the bar for a drink. Now, a ghastly hush has fallen over the congregation. Listeners, they all know about Max. He never bought anyone a drink. And Eddie and I looked at each other, couldn't believe it. Just the same, we followed him up to Circle Bar, which was deserted, of course, because the first half of the show was still on. So Max had us down, started talking about the show business, asking us what we wanted to do, had we got an agent and all that stuff. In fact, the only question he didn't ask us was, what will you have? Now, after a while, I looked at Eddie, he looked at me. We were on £7 between the two of us, you know. And Eddie looked at me and shrugged and looked at me. He said, "Well, what would you like to drink, Mr. Miller?" He said, "What are you on about?" Max said, "Now sit down, will you?" And he carried on passing on his tips about our act until the silence descended once more. This time it was my turn to get up and offer him a drink. He said, "Sit down. I asked you for one, didn't I?" I glumly obeyed, and Max returned to the general chit-chat, his hand at no time going near his pocket. Finally, the interval arrived, the door opened, and all the people came in from the audience. And the first bloke in said, "Blimey, here's old Max." He said, "What will you have, Max?" He said, "I'll have a gin and tonic. What will you have, Roy? What will you have?"
That was Roy Hudd remembering Max Miller from a programme entitled Tales from the Lodge Room, directed by David Blount. Still to come, memories of the achievements of the architect and engineer Eugenius Birch, who built the magnificent West Pier. Also, we'll be speculating about what Brighton's new I360 tower might look like and what it might represent. A play called Casting Shadows is next, which was first broadcast in 2004, and starred Roy Hudd in the central role of Max Miller. The play was about an imaginary meeting between Max Miller, Laurence Olivier and Terence Rattigan, in which Olivier asks Miller to play the gravedigger in Hamlet at his new National Theatre. The play was written by actor and writer Mark Burgess, who's joined me here by a row of beach huts below the Royal Crescent. So, Mark, what was it that actually inspired the play?
Well, Tony, I'd been an actor for many years, doing theatre and touring and TV and radio, and I was very interested in getting into writing. Inspiration was rather slow in coming, as it often is. But having lived in Brighton for many years, I often used to walk along the Marine Parade in Kemp Town and see these plaques on three of the houses. There was one, obviously, outside Olivier's house, right above us, as you just said, at Royal Crescent. And then 100 yards to his right was one for Terence Rattigan, a great playwright. And going the other way, 100 yards, was Max Miller. And it just occurred to me, these were three people that I idolised, really, particularly Olivier. And I thought, maybe there's something there, maybe there is some sort of a story there. So the next thing was to look at the dates on the plaques and to actually see whether they could have been there at the same time. And looking at the various dates on each of them, it seemed that 1962 was the period when they would all have been living in those respective houses at the same time. And so I whittled it down to the first weekend in August 1962. And I just thought, where can we bring these three great men of British theatre? Where can we put them? Where can the story play out? And it just seemed a fun idea. My parents had a beach hut right down here at the time. And I thought, well, let's say that Olivier had a beach hut, which we know that he did, number one in this stretch, and let's put them in the beach hut. So the play very largely is actually set in the beach hut.
Seasides are often thought of as a great leveller. We don't actually know if they really did meet in reality, although in Ratigan's play The Prince and the Showgirl, Olivier starred, but he and Max Miller never actually met, did they?
That's right. I mean, Ratigan and Olivier were friends, and they had worked together, as you say, most notably in that production, but they certainly knew each other very well. Miller, I can't quite see Miller and Ratigan meeting, and I don't think they did. I'm not sure whether Olivier and Miller met, but there's probably more chance that they did. I mean, Olivier based his great performance as Archie Rice in The Entertainer very much on Miller and his kind, and he was very keen to go around the music halls of the country, Olivier, this is, with the writer John Osborne, and looked at variety in action on the stages. So he drew a lot from Max Miller, and that's, again, that's a sort of a link that comes up in the play Casting Shadows.
Well, thanks very much, Mark, for joining me here on this windy beach next to the Peeling Beach Huts.
It's been a pleasure, Tony, thank you.
Well, let's hear the play.
Casting Shadows by Mark Burgess.
Last orders, please, ladies and gentlemen. Last orders at the bar. Thank you very much.
Good night then, Vera.
Are you not staying for another one, Maxie? That isn't like you.
Well, I know, V, but I've got to be off. Off into the balmy Brighton night and home. Home to the warm and loving arms of my dear wife. Well, I'm going home at any rate.
Here, have one on me, Max. You'll be doing me a favour. Love to be able to tell me mates I bought the great Maxie Miller a drink.
Well, since you put it like that, it would be uncharitable not to accept.
Same again.
Another pint of best would be lovely. Always said you got a better class of customer in here, didn't I, B? Speaking of which, don't let me keep you from them. I don't want them to think I'm getting special attention.
No, it's all right. I've got help tonight. Oh. There you go.
That looks wonderful. Your good health, my friend.
My pleasure, Max.
Always tastes better when it's bought for you, doesn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Now then. You know I can be very sensitive. Huh. Funny when you think about it, isn't it? All the pints I've drunk here at the Hand in Hand over the years, I don't think I've ever had to pay for one of them. The only time my hands have entered my pockets is when I've needed to blow me nose.
I don't know how you manage it.
It's a gift, I suppose. No, I'm not saying I'm proud of it, V. It's just a fact. But it goes to prove I've still got it, doesn't it, eh? Whatever the hell it is, I've still got it. It's because I'm retired, just because folk won't see me telling jokes and singing songs up on the stage anymore. It doesn't mean they're ever going to forget me, does it?
You're a different class, Maxie.
Class of me own, V. There'll never be another lady. Here's to the great British public. Where would I be without them? Sober and broke, I shouldn't wonder. Here. I went to the doctor's the other day, did I tell you?
Oh, no, is this going to be a long joke? And it's closing time soon, you know.
It's not a joke. I only wish it were. No, he gave my heart the once-over yet again and told me straight away to cut back on the drinking and to give up the golf.
Oh, Max.
One more round of golf, he said, would be like teeing up another heart attack. You'd drop quicker than a 6-inch putt on the ninth. Nice line, that. And I told him so. Doc, I said, if I was still working, I'd have given you a fiver for that. Well, £2.10, eh? He'd have taken it as well. I don't know. Everyone's a comedian these days. Except me.
You'll miss your golf, though, won't you?
I will. Still, perhaps it's just as well. I was always worried in case I got a hole in one.
Why's that?
Well, imagine having to buy the whole blooming clubhouse a drink.
Oh,
mind you, I couldn't have played tomorrow, even if I wanted to. Well, aren't you going to ask why, Max?
Why, Max?
Well, I'm very glad you asked me that, V, because tomorrow I am being entertained by royalty. Well, not far off it, I've been invited to take afternoon tea with Britain's most famous actor. Or did he say Brighton's?
Sir Lawrence.
The very man. I've not met him before, so I'm looking forward to it.
But he
only lives round the corner from you. I quite thought you'd have bumped into him before now.
Funny, isn't it? It's a shame he's never been in here. Blimey, you'd stand him a port and lemon in return for a signed packet of Olivier cigarettes, wouldn't you be? Anyway, he was charm itself when he phoned me up. Mr. Miller, he said, am one of your greatest admirers. That's nice, I said, so am I. All right, so I've been funnier, but I was tired when he called, see? Made no difference. Laugh like a drain, he did. Blimey, I said, I wish you'd been in the audience when I played the Glasgow Empire 30 years ago. That got him. And him rolling on the floor with that one.
Where's he taking you, then? The Grand Hotel?
Yeah. If that's what he calls his beach hut, yes.
Beach hut?
Every expense spared. I'm warming to him already. Mind you, he's asked a mate of his along as well. A writer, I think you said. Didn't say his name. Posh, I shouldn't wonder. Anyone for tennis and all that, eh? It's fair enough. I can hold my own with the theatrical aristocracy. I can apply my 5 and 9 with the best of them. Thank you very much.
Well, you have a lovely day. It'll do you good to do something different.
Yeah. You're right.
Time, ladies and gentlemen. Could I have your glasses, please? That's time at the bar. Thank you. I'm going to have to throw you out as well now, I'm afraid, Maxie.
That's all right. I need to get my beauty sleep anyway. Got to be sure the cheeky chap is sparkling tomorrow, haven't I, eh? That's it. Cheerio then, Vera. '78, '79, '80. Struth. It's a long way down all these steps. I swear they add more every year. 81, 82. I'm exhausted. I knew I shouldn't have had seconds of Yorkshire pudding. 83, 84, and we've landed. Now then, let's have a look. Now, which one did he say was his? Halfway along on the right, past the one with the seaweed hanging outside. That's it, there's a touch me seaweed. I knew it was going to do. Well, looks like the doors are open, but there's no one home. Hello? Hello? Who's your lady friend? What's this he's reading? Hamlet by William Shakespeare. Yeah, there's a funny thing. Well, I'm definitely at the right hut anyway. Oh no, I'm sorry. I can't stand on ceremony. I've got to sit down. Oh, yeah, that's better. Oh, God, shit. Ah, nice binoculars. He's got all the gear, hasn't he? Now, let us see what we can see. Oh, hello. It's the man himself, isn't it? I'd recognise him anywhere, even without the hunchback and the long hooter. Blimey, he's not swimming to the end of the pier, is he? How does he do it? Why does he do it?
You're not thinking of joining him, then?
Acorn! My good God! Oh, and me with my dicky heart and all.
Sorry if I startled you. No, please, don't get up. Ratigan. Terry.
Miller. Maxie. Yes. Oh, so it's you, is it?
Didn't Larry tell you I was coming?
No. He said he'd invited a writer friend along. But that was all. No other clues.
He does love intrigue, you know. Anything to heighten the suspense.
You could have been anyone for all, aren't you?
No. I could only have been me. Larry's the actor.
Do you take ready cash for gags? It's truth. Yeah, what a partnership we'd have made, eh? Max Miller, the cheeky chappy. Original material written by Terence Rattigan. With billing like that, I'd have done twice as many raw variety shows.
I'm afraid I've never written a joke in my life.
Oh, there's nothing to it once you've got the knack. Give me a pencil, the back of an envelope, and I've got myself a year's work.
Just a knack.
That's all it is.
Well, I envy you, Max.
Oh, get away, Terry. Look at all those terrific plays you've got behind you.
Yes, precisely.
Well, they're classics, aren't they? Timeless.
Dated.
Class doesn't date. Take it from me. You're not going in then?
Oh, I think it would kill me. I haven't swum in England since I was too young to know better.
Can't say I blame you. It's always cold out there. Didn't worry us as kids, mind you. Nothing does when you're young, does it? 12 of us there were.
Oh, your poor mother.
There were so many of us swimming out there, we looked like a blooming armada. Well, I've not seen it this busy down here for a long while.
Well for the fisherman's boy that he shouts with his sister at play. Well for the sailor lad that he sings in his boat on the bay.
Very nice. Something of yours?
Tennyson. Drilled into me at Harrow. Can't seem to get that out of my head at the moment.
Yes. I have the same problem with jokes. Drives me mad. Especially when it's one of Tommy Trinder's. Now, let's have another look through these. See what our friend is up to now. Blimey, how far out is he swimming, for God's sake? Has he got a matinee in France or something? So, what are you writing these days, Terry?
Flops, mostly.
Now then. Let's have none of that sort of talk. Not on a Sunday. Look, it's a lovely day. The company's good. You're famous, wealthy and talented. I'll give you that for nothing. And any minute now, with a bit of luck and a fair wind, his Nibs might grace us with his presence and a drink.
So you two have never met?
Daft, isn't it? But our paths have never crossed. Mind you, neither had ours till today.
I tend not to stop in one place for long.
Neither do I with an act like mine.
It's confession time, I'm afraid.
The good Lord will forgive you all your sins.
I've never seen you on stage.
Well, on this occasion, he's willing to make an exception. Anyway, you've missed your chance, Terry. I'm done with it all now.
Oh, come off it. I know your breed. Comedians are still cracking jokes even as the lid's being nailed down.
Now, don't you go trying to cheer me up. It's funny when you think about it. You spend what seems like every night of your life in front of hundreds of people, giving them something they'll remember forever. Pardon my modesty. And then, once you stop, the moment you call it a day, everything goes quiet, sort of still, as if none of it ever happened. Except it did. I'm blooming sure it did.
Is he swimming in our direction yet?
Oh, let's see. Oh, yes. Looks like the whiff of garlic has forced him to turn back. He's just coming up the beach now.
Oh.
I say, he's pretty fit, isn't he? Oh, that's more like it. He forgot to take his shoes down. Walking on those pebbles makes anyone look 100. Oh, dear, he is in trouble. Don't you help him, madam, for God's sake. I don't think he'd appreciate it. Oh, no. She's helping him up the beach. She thinks he's an old man. I can't watch any more.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! I am so sorry to have neglected you. Please forgive my appalling manners. I hope you've not been waiting an eternity. Oh, Terry, throw me that towel, would you?
Oh, yes.
Thank you.
Larry, your energy puts me to shame.
Ah, you're fit enough for your rounds of golf.
What's this? A fellow golf nut?
Mr. Miller, we meet at last. My admiration for you is without limit.
Well, thank you.
Oh, Larry, for heaven's sake.
Larry. Well, I'm delighted to be here, Larry. Now, you'll have to excuse me. I'm not often humbled. Not Maxie Miller, but when I am, I lose all feeling in my legs. So I'll have to sit down again before I fall down.
From this moment on, that deck chair is yours, and yours alone.
That's very kind.
Now, before I do anything else, I'm going to put on a pair of bloody shoes. Quite how I manage to forget them each and every time I go down for a swim is beyond me. Considering that one has to negotiate half a mile of tortuous stones in the first place, you'd think it would be pretty difficult, wouldn't you? Still, I don't suppose anybody noticed my anguish.
Oh, no. I'm sure not. Only the young woman who carried you up and those of us with binoculars.
Thank you, Max. How reassuring to know so soon in our friendship that one may always depend on you. Now, I don't know about you two, but I'm in need of a glass of something. Champagne?
Oh. Well, I told my missus I was meeting you two for a cup of tea. You'll have me coming over all guilty if you're not careful.
Well, there's some orange juice if you prefer a backstairs.
I've always thought the best place for orange juice is in an orange.
He's good, isn't he, Larry, eh? It's quality material I'm hearing here. I was just saying, what a team we'd have made, eh? Rattigan and Miller, a touch of class. Just a shame you brought us together a few years too late. That's not to say Trinder wouldn't use your stuff, Terry. I know he's not class like me, but he's been using the same material since the war, for heaven's sake. And 1918 was a long time ago. Oh, boy.
A toast, I think.
What should we drink to?
3 in the morning.
I'm going to write these down, I swear it. I'm going to write them down.
To a golden afternoon with friends, old and new.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Ah, lovely.
That's brought the feeling back to my feet. Well, my dear friends, this is a great privilege to have you here together on this most perfect of days. There's nowhere in the world I'd rather be.
Well, it's good of you to ask me. I don't get out now as much as I used to.
Oh, you've certainly been keeping yourself to yourself, Max. I thought I'd be running into you every 5 minutes on the promenade. Never had you marked down as being the shy and retiring sort.
Shy? No. Retiring? Yes.
Nonsense.
I don't much like it, but it's doctor's orders. Mind you, once the old ticker starts playing up, you soon get the message. He's been nagging me to slow down for years anyway. Take a month off, we used to say. A month off, I'd say. It's a ruddy lifetime. No, I mean, really, boys, if I'd have cancelled all my bookings for a month, where would that have left me? Down here, dipping my toes in the briny, while bloody Charlie Chester pinched all my dates. I wouldn't have done that to any audience. I'm not a wicked man.
Max, you'll never give this game up.
Yes, it's given me up, Larry, if the truth be told. And I blame the television. You know, I mean, I ask you, how can you compete with that box, eh? Once you've told a joke on that thing, that's it. You can never use it again, because the world and his wife have heard it. Material that's been good to you for 40 years has gone in 40 seconds. Gone forever. A lot of my crowd have died a death on it. Almost literally. Years and years have been playing the horse, same routines night after night, and suddenly bang. They're on the box for 5 minutes and that's it. They've nothing left to give. So they just drop back at the end of the pier, right where they started, playing in front of half-full auditoriums of holidaymakers with nothing better to do. Rain coming down in sheets, a draught that could cut you in two coming through the stage door, and an untuned piano in the orchestra pit. No, it's every comic's nightmare, that. That's not the way Maxie Miller should go. Oh, no. That's not Maxie Miller's style. No, that's more like...
Archie Rice.
Yes, you're right, Terry. Archie Blooming Rice, the entertainer. Now, there's a funny thing. And all based on me. Didn't I read that somewhere, Larry? That your definitive performance was based on me?
My dear Max, be reassured. You're a million miles away from Archie Rice. Archie never topped any bill worth topping, never told a really funny joke, never sang and danced with your grace and style. When I played Archie, I made him a pathetic figure, dead behind the eyes. And the audience could see in those eyes all the bitterness, sadness and failure of his life. Look at your eyes, Max.
How do I do that, then?
Take my word for it. I have looked into the eyes of more performers than most, and yours tell a very different story. One I simply won't believe you finished telling.
I wish I'd seen it now. The entertainer.
How on earth could you have stayed away?
Well, now, I'm not much good the other side of the footlights. Get a bit twitchy, see? I'd have been watching you, Larry, doing your bit as Archie Rice, dying a death like he's supposed to, I know. But I'd never have accepted it as a play, you see. I'd have been dying with you. That and the fact he never sent me a complimentary ticket, Terry.
Well, I know Mrs. Miller saw it. She came round afterwards.
Why, had she fainted? Everyone a winner. No. She told me she loved it. Said the acting was quite good. Now, there's a compliment, if you like. And she doesn't throw him around, see? Said she preferred it to the other play that fellow wrote. What was that called now?
Look Back in Anger.
That's the one.
The play that changed the face of British theatre.
Did it need changing?
Don't start, Terry, on this one, Max.
At the time, I didn't believe so. I was more than content writing drama of the French window variety. Unfortunately for me, audiences were suddenly demanding that of the kitchen sink.
while others were hoping it would disappear down its own plug hole.
You two really should collaborate, you know.
Nah, well, I'm not French window or kitchen sink, I'm afraid. Be yourself, Terry. Not what others think you should be.
I didn't change. Couldn't. Which is precisely why my tenure as King of the West End came to such an abrupt halt. Dear God. Seems like only yesterday. The first night of Look Back in Anger, even had the cheek to ask for an aisle seat so I could leave early. And it went at all because Binky Beaumont couldn't face it alone. I remember you arriving, Larry, with seconds to spare from shooting, dare I mention it, The Prince and the Showgirl.
Another life-changing experience.
God bless Marilyn Monroe. Mm. Of course, I didn't leave early, unlike Binky. No, I'm afraid by the end of Act One, my curiosity had got the better of me. Jimmy Porter certainly seemed angry, but I was buggered if I could see what about. So it was a case in the bar afterwards of setting upon my face an expression of absolute knowing, as though the very meaning of our existence had just been brilliantly illuminated for me by this piece. And then a rather intense young man pressed me for my thoughts on the play. And I muttered something rather despairingly about each of us having an anger within us, but he wasn't convinced. Neither was I. He gave me a look of some sympathy and rejoined his friends, and as I watched them, talking animatedly over their halves of bitter, I felt the first waves of panic come over me. And that's when I realised the rules of the game had changed. Suddenly I was the old era, talking to the new with a cocktail.
Must have been quite a night.
Oh, it was. Though it wasn't until I'd seen it a second time that I appreciated its full significance.
Which was?
That if I didn't take this revolution seriously, go wherever it was heading, I'd be dead as an actor.
Really?
Absolutely, no question. It was a road I had to journey on.
A case of the road not taken by yours truly.
Oh, come now, Terry. There's no need to be so hard on yourself. Not after all this time.
I agree. Stick to what you do best. After all, not everybody wants to see plays that are set in blooming attics and kitchens and boarding houses. I mean, it's just our real life, isn't it? And that's where these new fellas will come unstuck, I'm telling you. The public won't take it forever. They'll get fed up, and when they do, they'll come back to you. Mark my words, they will come back. It's all about class.
You can say that again.
And when they come back, you better have something ready to give them. There's few second chances in this game.
And to think all I ever wanted was to grow old in the almost certain knowledge that a play of mine would still be packing them in 50 years' time. Hit the 50-year mark and one is guaranteed immortality.
Perhaps you've already written it.
Perhaps.
Well, of course, it's different for you, isn't it, Larry? You're changing all the time, with every part you play.
And that suits me fine, believe me. A moving target's harder to hit. Now, come on. Let me top you up.
It's one of your lesser-known talents, Larry. Keeping one step ahead of the game. Oh, thank you. Delightful. God knows how you do it, but it can't always be down to luck.
It is no more than that. Luck has granted me the ability to smell when change is in the air. The clever bit, if you like, is recognising that and acting upon it.
Pun intended, of course.
Of course. But I try not to think too much about it. Luck has rather a tiresome habit of disappearing just when you thought it was yours for keeps. But for heaven's sake, you are the people who change things in this world, not me. You are the social commentators. You have a voice that people will happily pay to listen to. Audiences only pay to hear me, that's the difference. You shape and inform our everyday lives. What do? Learn my lines, slap on the makeup, and try not to trip over the furniture. And I don't always manage to do that.
Paxi Miller, the social commentator, eh? And I thought the cheeky chappy was classy.
Follow your nose and trust it to know where it's going.
Doesn't he make it sound easy, eh, Terry?
That's the real art, making your success appear as though it's the most natural thing in the world. But that's Larry for you. King of the castle one day, king of another castle the next day, and king of whichever castle he cares to build the next.
I'm sure you're not a jealous man, Terry, but how can you bear to have someone like Larry as a friend, eh?
I simply pray I'm around when he loses his sense of smell.
So where's your nose telling you to go next, Larry? More castle building?
Oh, methinks you know more than you're letting on.
Do you? Do I?
Don't you?
I don't think so. I don't know anything. It's just the sun in my eyes, Makes me look shifty, see?
Well, I shouldn't really say anything just yet.
Fair enough.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Come on, Larry, you know it's the worst-kept secret in British theatre.
Is it now? Shows how long I've been away from the business. Time was when no bit of gossip passed me by.
Gentlemen, at the risk of sounding pompous...
Yes?
All right, so I am being pompous. But I am bound to be silent until next week's official announcement.
Oh, come. You know full well you're going to spill the beans before the day's out. So why don't you just put this poor man out of his misery?
Oh, Max. Max, it's terribly exciting. The greatest challenge of my career, of my life. For the first time in this country's glorious cultural history, we are to have a national theatre to be built on London's South Bank. And I have been appointed its first director. Breathe not a word.
Oh, I knew that.
What?
Well, it's the worst kept secret in British theatre, isn't it?
Are you sure you two haven't met before?
No, I'm only kidding. No, it's all news to me, Larry, like most things these days. Really. Well, here's another toast, eh? To you, Larry. The top dog. The number one. The
king of the castle.
King of the castle.
It's an enormously daunting prospect. But how could I resist? To do what I've done along the coast of Chichester, but on a national scale. It won't be quick or easy, but it will be challenging. And this is where you come in, Terry.
Oh.
Because instead of selling your wonderful words to Hollywood, may I suggest that you think seriously about coming back to the boards and producing for my new baby a piece of contemporary drama that will not be a million miles away from a 100% tub-thumping, foot-stomping hit. In other words, write me a play.
Is that a genuine offer?
I make no others. Think about it. Recharge your batteries. Give these new boys a little anger from an old master.
I don't know.
The national needs you, Terry. The best actors, the finest directors, the most imaginative designers, the greatest dramatists. Talent and energy, my only demands. Allow me to supply the luck. And now, my friends, if you will please excuse me for a moment.
We're not going for another swim, surely.
Don't forget your shoes this time. Madam down there is still laughing herself stupid over your last performance. Not on stage, I mean down there on the beach.
Thank you. I am not, in fact, about to go for a swim, but up to the house, which should still be there if the little lad has resisted the temptation to demolish it brick by brick.
Kids, eh?
Whereupon, I shall return with tea and fruitcake.
Bring the young fella down. I could play Grandad. I'd love that. It's as close as I'll ever get.
And he would love it too, I know. But on this particular occasion, this afternoon, I need to speak with you, Max, without any fear of distraction. You see, whilst you could play Grandad beautifully, I actually want you to consider playing something else for me.
Yes?
I have decided, and it has been officially confirmed by the Board of Governors, that my opening production at the National Theatre's temporary residence next year will be Hamlet.
Yes?
For my money, the greatest play ever written.
Ah.
O'Toole will play the prince.
Lovely.
Redgrave Claudius.
Yeah.
And you, Max.
Yes.
I should like you to play First Gravedigger.
You what?
Here's the script. I'll fetch some tea.
First Gravedigger? First Gravedigger. Here, Terry, does he get more laughs than the second one?
How long hast thou been a grave maker?
Of all the days in the year, I came to it that day that our lost King Hamlet overcame Fortinbras. Oh, I don't know, Terry, it's a bit above my head, all this.
Nonsense, Max, you're making perfect sense of it. Remember, Shakespeare wrote it for the comedian in his company.
Well, he must have been a damn sight funnier than me if he had him rolling in the arms with this stuff.
You'll have the audience eating out of your hands. Look, he's even given you a song.
Not exactly Mary from the Dairy, is it?
The way you'll do it, nobody will be able to tell the difference. Go on, make up a tune for now.
It's truth. I wouldn't even give this to Trinder. In youth, when I did love, methought 'twas very sweet. To contract all the time for a may be hope.
Has this fellow no feeling of his business that he sings at grave-making?
A custom hath made it in him a property of easiness.
Is e'en so? The hound of little employment hath the daintier sense.
That's easy for you to say.
This is terribly encouraging, Max, terribly encouraging. An actor learning his lines with over a year to go before opening night. Your dedication is humbling. Not only will you steal the show from Benito Tool's exquisitely re-sculptured nose, but you will find yourself revered by each and every member of the company. Welcome to the National...
Now, half a minute. I mean, that's very flattering indeed. But I'm getting on a bit, you know.
Rubbish. You're young enough to play the Dane himself. Now, do have some tea. And since my darling boy has been good enough to leave some, I insist you have a piece of cake as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Look, I know 67 is not exactly ancient, but, well, there have been 67 hard years. Very hard, some of them.
I do understand.
No, don't think I'm being ungrateful, please. I'm not at all, really. Oh, God, have I stuck my size nines right in it?
You're not being ungrateful.
Well, it all comes as a bit of a surprise, that's all. What the wife will say, heaven only knows. When she hears I've been spouting the bard on the beach and the world's greatest actor has asked me to do Hamlet for him.
Sugar, Max?
Two, please. Well, she'll either think I've been in the sun too long or I've been drinking. All right, I'll give her that, but this has come as a great shock. I don't mind a minute, a great shock. It's like me asking you two if you fancy reforming the Three Ernestos and playing the summer season at Blackpool with me.
The three Ernestos,
comedy acrobats, jugglers years ago. You know Frank Randall? That's how he started.
Bah! I've sucked some ale tonight.
That's the fella. I'm impressed, Larry.
Oh, my God, it's another language.
Hey, thank you.
There's no stopping him now. Listen to him. The voice of them all. Never mind the National. You'll find yourself topping at the Palladium if you're not careful. Oh, I love a bit of fruitcake.
Old Mother Riley?
Hmm? Sorry?
Gracie Fields. Sandy Powell.
I'm sorry, Jerry. You've lost me completely.
Oh, I thought it was a catchphrase. Ooh, I love a bit of fruitcake. Sorry.
Heavens above. Who'd have thought old Maxie could bring you two down to his level, eh?
Impossible.
That's nice, isn't it, Jerry? Doesn't he say the nicest thing?
No, it's not a question of levels. There's little difference between us. What you do and I do are the same. We're as brave or as foolhardy as each other. If anything, you stand a taller. Ask me to do what you do and I'd scare myself witless just thinking about it.
But you have. Archie Rice.
Wasn't me. That's the difference. Give me a part and I'll play it. Just don't ask me to be myself on stage. I'm not that good an actor. Oh! And by the way, it may surprise you to know that I have already appeared on a variety bill. Thank you very much.
Get away.
1925. Brighton Hippodrome, funnily enough. My debut on the professional stage. I played a short scene with Ruby Miller.
No rubbish.
No. It was a charity do, and we were the token straight act. Never forgotten it. Tripped up on my first entrance. Big entrance, too. Upstage centre. Start as you mean to go on, I suppose. Went boom! Caught my foot in the doorframe, and down I went quicker than a stage weight dropped from the flies. And as I slowly raised my head above the footlights, I saw the audience laughing themselves senseless at this poor, unfortunate creature who lay prostrate before them. And that's the moment I said to myself, Larry, this is the life for you.
Mm.
It's still the biggest laugh I've ever got. And here I am, nearly 40 years on, living in the town where it all started.
I've never left. Never wanted to. On days like this, why would anyone want to?
Because it's not always like this.
Brighton's always golden and glorious, Terry.
You must lend me your rose-tinted spectacles. 2 years I've been down here. Still there are some tea chests that remain unpacked. Always feel I'm about to move on. When life gets even remotely complicated, I pack my pen, putter, and push off.
Bloody exhausting chasing your own end around the world all the time. Here's as good as anywhere.
I prefer to keep moving. No ties, no restrictions.
Tell me to mind my own business, Terry, but is there a Mrs. Rattigan?
Yes. She was married to my father. And as you might say, Max, there'll never be another.
Well, you don't know.
I think I can be fairly confident.
Oh,
I see. Well, I'm sorry, I had no idea.
Good. My lifelong commitment to those two great English vices, reticence and repression, would have been for nothing if you had.
Oh, for goodness sake, Terry, what does it matter? Would anyone think differently of you if they knew you were... Of course not, no. Besides, in our line of business, it's virtually compulsory, isn't it, Larry? Who's going to be shocked these days?
You won't have met Terry's mother.
Oh, Terry, you disappoint me. Frightened at what your mum will say? You're a big boy now, you know.
Ah, but still my mother's son. Still trying to win her approval. Letting her read each new play of mine before anyone else sees it. Still she comes away with me, stays with me. And it works well for us. Largely because she's never questioned my lifestyle. And some of the friends I keep. She just wants it all to be better for me, to be appreciated again. And so that is why I am obliged to remain reticent and repressed for my mother's sake.
Well, I suppose we've all got skeletons in our cupboards, haven't we? So, if Blighty can't hold you, where next?
Well, Ischia, maybe. I have a villa there. Or Jamaica.
No, she won't.
Resisted, Max.
Sorry.
But most probably America. MGM are pushing me to complete the screenplay of my airport film.
Perhaps this will be the big hit you're after.
Oh, no. I don't envisage this being a classic film, I'm afraid. Lots of star names, a smattering of some half-decent dialogue, and that's your lot. A money job for all concerned.
Terrific. I'll make sure I'm available.
Sorry, Max, I booked you first.
No, you'll be wonderful in it. They're all cameo roles, and you'll be perfect. Max Miller and Marilyn Monroe in the same picture. What a partnership, eh, Larry?
Got her lined up, have you?
Well, she's interested. But it's not so easy now. We met fleetingly at an airport just by chance only recently. I was in the VIP lounge waiting for my flight when in she walked, surrounded, of course, by her army of assistants. Mm. She caught sight of me, came over and sat down, just the two of us. And she asked what I was working on, so I showed her some of the ideas I'd had for this film. And that's when she said she'd love to do something of mine again. But, as I say...
It's not that easy now.
How so?
There's not a studio that will employ her. Too great a risk. That day at the airport, she seemed totally detached from all that was going on around her. And it was so obvious, well, to me at least, that it wasn't going to get any better. But for those brief moments, we just talked, as old friends, as we are now. Which is why I mentioned the part in the film. She would be perfect for it, but we both knew in our hearts that... But it didn't stop me suggesting it. And then, when we parted, when she was called for her flight, she smiled, you know, smile. Said goodbye and gently kissed me. Something about her seemed different. I felt she was about to say something else, but one of her entourage charged over and whisked her away. And that was it. She was gone. Both of us on our way to God knows where.
Sad when you think about it, isn't it, Larry?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Well, I ought to think about going home. If I head off now, I might make it to the top of the steps before nightfall.
Now, you are not allowed to forget my proposal, Max. It is a serious offer. No need to commit yourself yet. Go home. Read the play.
Well, all of it? And everyone else's lines?
Hear that, Terry? A born actor, only interested in his own part.
I'll have a go. I'll read it from the beginning. But it's a blooming long time before The Gravedigger comes on. Act five,
scene one, near the end, yes.
Wow, you see, that's where we're in trouble before we've even started. If I don't come on until the end of the play, how am I going to catch my last train home, eh? You know, I'm the only top of the bill who never actually tops the bill. Never comes on last. That's so I can always make my last train home, see? The wife's had it put into every contract she's ever negotiated for me. And you don't want to mess with her. I don't mind telling you. Have you thought about cutting the play down a bit?
This production of Hamlet will be played uncut, I'm afraid. Around 4 hours.
Oh, my good God. It's looking murky now. Tell me, where's it going on? Which theatre?
Well, until the new theatre is built, we shall be taking up temporary residence at the Old Vic.
The Old Vic? Blimey, that's next to Waterloo Station, isn't it? It's not even Victoria. I've got to be near Victoria to get my Brighton train. I'm cutting it fine as it is.
Why don't you talk it over with your wife? And remember, I'm only round the corner. Let's meet again soon. Have another chat and a cuppa.
I'd like that. I'd like that a lot. And if ever you're around, Terry, I'll be pleased to relieve you of some of your money on the golf course. All right? Only 9 holes, mind. Can't upset my doctor too much.
You're on. I'll get to work on my swing immediately.
You'll need to, let me warn you. Well, thanks again, Larry, for asking me along. It's been lovely. Really lovely.
You're always welcome, Max. Anytime you see me coming down here with tea and fruitcake under my arm, don't stand on ceremony.
Oh, I love a bit of fruitcake.
Oh, no, don't start all that again.
Right then. Deep breaths, and I'll begin my ascent. Cheerio, fellas.
Look after yourself, Max. Yeah. Do give my regards to Mrs. Miller.
Will do. 84. 83.
I suppose I should think about going as well. Let you have some time with the family.
Oh, help me to finish the last of the champagne, won't you? We meet up so infrequently these days.
Well, you've talked me into it.
Good.
Cheers. Mm. Who'd have thought? The three of us, eh? Here in a hut on Brighton Beach.
Oh, we must do it again next year. Every year. The first Sunday in August.
That rather depends.
Oh, you'll still be here. No need to move on for a good while yet. Besides, I want to keep my eye on you. Crack the whip while you write my play.
Larry.
And Max, he's not getting off lightly either, but he's different. This really is his home.
Were you serious?
About
Max? Hamlet?
Certainly.
It's going to surprise a few people. Create quite a stir.
Very probably.
I have to hand it to you, Larry. You know how to work the press. Once they get wind of this, you'll have the house full signs up before the ink's even dried on Max's contract.
But don't you agree? It's a quite brilliant piece of casting. I genuinely happen to think that Maxie would be wonderful in the role. Quite wonderful.
But he won't do it, will he?
No, of course he won't.
Do you really think that?
I've always known he wouldn't.
So why...
Well, Max doesn't know this, and I certainly wouldn't tell him, but I see him most days along Marine Parade. I look out of my front window and I see him shuffling along, on his own usually, sometimes with his wife, but more often than not on his own. And every now and then he'll stop and look slowly around for someone to talk to. But there's no one there. Or if there is, they walk on past because they don't always recognise him. Kids. Then he'll lean against the railings and look out to sea at this, the piers, the front where it all started for him, where he first began performing in the Great War. Sit down on one of the benches for an hour or so, reading his paper or just looking out to sea. Whatever the weather, rain or shine, he'll be there, on the front, out facing the sea, grinning his grin. Older and slower now than the world remembers him, but his eyes still sparkling, bluer than the ocean. But it could have been so different for him. If only I'd known him years ago, I could perhaps have pointed his career in a different direction. Given him new challenges. He just needed to be shown that they were there in the first place. So, that's why I offered Max the part. For pretty much the same reason you asked Marilyn to be in your film. We're all family, aren't we? I mean, one has to look after one's own when a loved one is down. Doesn't one?
You always do, Larry. And I do appreciate it. I must go. Thank you for this afternoon. It has made a difference. And not only for Max. You know, that could have been his catchphrase, couldn't it? Max Miller, bluer than the ocean.
He was right, Terry. You have missed your vocation.
Give my love to your adorable family.
Take care, wherever you find yourself.
Break, break, break at the foot of thy crags, O sea.
But the tender grace of a day that is dead.
Oh, don't tell me you had to learn that at school as well.
No, we were given a choice. Either that or the charge of the Light Brigade. Although it was longer, I chose the latter.
Now, why doesn't that surprise me? But the tender grace of a day that is dead will never come back to me.
Tennyson. Alfred.
There'll never be another.
Miller. Maxie.
In Casting Shadows by Mark Burgess, Roy Hudd was Max Miller, Keith Drinkle, Laurence Olivier, David Collings, Terence Rattigan, and Jean Trend, Vera. Casting Shadows was a Peer production for BBC Radio 4, directed by David Blount.